Blog Talk Radio.
Great for us to find the
Wow, that was a definitely a beautiful, beautiful track right there. What's up, y'all? This is your girl, Carla. And I am back. We are back right here on EOTM Radio, where we are just always striving to encourage, empower, and, of course, enlighten your mind. And speaking of enlightening, if you're needing some, guess what? You will always, always find it when you visit www.queensofinternetradio.com. And if you are streaming live to our radio show right now, we want you to make sure that before you leave that you subscribe to receive alerts to future shows, because you're just not going to want to miss any of the greatness that we have in store for you. And it's greatness, and when I say greatness, it's definitely greatness globally. Because we definitely bring you a little bit of every side of the globe. Really quick, if you are in the entertainment industry, or if you are a business owner, fellow entrepreneur, if you will, make sure you check out our newest website, our public relations site, and you can actually find it by visiting www.eotmmediagroup.com. Or even Googling "need a publicist," you'll find us in the organic section. We're definitely trying to make our way, make our impact on Google. You know, such a beautiful thing. And of course, as I said, and I don't even know if I said it at the beginning, but I got my girl, my ride or die chick, my ace, coon, boom, all that good stuff. We got, of course, Queen G. She is, this show tonight, yeah, definitely is presented by Edge Light Entertainment, uniting a million men. Queen G, girlfriend, what's good with you?
Hey, Carla B. Hey, mama.
Hey, hey.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute. I'm happy to be on the air tonight. I've been talking so much, my voice is gone. So
wow.
I'm going to definitely try to, you know what I'm saying, belt out the words and make it clear. And hopefully you'll be able to hear me out there today, listeners, because I'm a little hoarse.
Well, you sound good, girl. Yeah. And talking a lot is a good thing, because that means you got something to talk about. So that's always
yes, ma'am.
A beautiful thing. And always a pleasure to be on air with you.
Oh, my God. Same here, Carla B. It is always great to be on the air with you as well. I love your voice. I love your energy. I love what you bring to the table. I like your opinions, all of that. I don't think we've ever disagreed in over a year, if
okay.
I can remember.
Yeah, we have not. We've always meshed pretty well. A round of applause on that. You know what I'm saying? That's
yes.
A good thing.
I like the little sounds, you know, the little sound effects of the applause. That's cool. That's cool.
Okay, girl, we got to keep it moving, you know?
Yes, 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 ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Oh, my God, I'm excited today, Carla, about today's topic and segment. It is just going to be very, very, very awesome. I just can't wait. Like, we're going to get into some different subject matters today that will blow your mind.
You know what?
And, go ahead, Carla B.
No, I was just going to say that that track right there was just so powerful, you know,
yes.
And definitely a great way to start the show off. But just listen to the words. I'm telling you, it definitely puts you in a mood to really get some great food for thought. That was powerful.
Yes, yes, it was. Oh, my God, and wait till you hear what we have in store. It is going to, like I said, just blow you away. It's so awesome. Just even our guests, I met them a while back, and it was at an event. It was at a Million March event, and I love this fellow's spirit, his words. He's very powerful. He's very spiritual, the whole nine, and I just had to bring him on as a guest. I could not keep EOTM away from having him on the show, you know what I mean?
Right, wow.
So I just, oh, my God, I was so touched. The event was so powerful that I actually had to go away from the event and wind down because
yeah.
It was so inspirational. It's like I needed to do it with the inspiration. I had to take it and exchange it. it was so, oh my God, high energy, very positive. It changed my life, put it like that. And I'm so blessed that we were allowed and able to get this guest on the show today, because his story is like no others that I've ever heard in my life, put it like that.
That's what's up.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to talk to him and until we hear his story. You know what I mean? I want to share it with you, Carla.
I mean, I'm ready to hear it. It's like, come on, bring him on, you know?
Yes, yes. Okay, you ready? All right, we're going to set it up. Our special guest, his name is Glenn Tari. He's a filmmaker that filmed the Million Man March over 15 years ago. And for those that remember, that's an event that was huge. It was a big, giant, historical event where we had it was a million men that came together to come up with solutions on behalf of the problems in the communities, the problems in our families, and that kind of thing. Can you imagine a million men together? That is just phenomenal. It's so powerful to even think of that. I mean, you don't usually get a lot of men together. I mean, we know they hang out, you know. They may hang out for a football game or something like that. Or they come together for specific reasons or something like that, but never for this type of moment. And I'm so happy to introduce our guest, Glenn Tari. Again, he's a filmmaker that filmed the Million Man March over 15 years ago. And, Glenn, are you there? I want to introduce you and tell the world about your story. Can you tell us your story? Can you get right into it? Tell us what happened, what inspired you to film this major event in history, all of that.
Yes, I'd like to first thank you, Carla B., and you, Queen G., for having me on the show. And the young man that's on the other line, who we haven't mentioned yet, but is my young brother, Lumumba. And it was because of Lumumba that I was actually able to be at that event, because it was Lumumba who you saw me at, because it was Lumumba that did all of the planning. To cut right to the chase, I went to the Million Man March 15 years ago, and it was something, as you were saying, that changed my life. It changed my life in so many ways, because I had never experienced that kind of emotion that was evident in the crowd of men that was there. My story probably isn't too much different from a lot of men. 2 weeks before the Million Man March, I was in film school, and I had no idea that the Million Man March was actually coming until a friend of mine, she called me up and she said, brother, are you going to the Million Man March? And I said, Million Man March, what's that? And I'm studying and everything. She said, well, the Million Man March, Minister Louis Farrakhan, is called for a million black men to come together in Washington, D.C., and to atone and to figure out ways to rectify the problems in our community. And she said, you're going. She didn't even ask me. She was that kind of a queen, you know. And I said, and we were good friends. And I said, okay, I'm going. And I went online and I began to find out more about it. And the more I found out about it, the more I knew I had to go. So I went back to school. Being a film student, I started looking for another student to go with me, because I said, well, what I'm going to do, I'm a film student, I'm going to shoot it. And I went back to the school, and I couldn't find anyone to go except for one student who was from Africa by the name of Linus Michael Letting. And as soon as I told Michael about it, Michael said, I'm going. It was just like that. And so I said, okay. And I put in a special, I applied to take a camera, a really nice camera with me at school, but in the last 3 days before we were to leave, I got the answer back, and they had decided that they were going to give me a camera, but the problem was it was a VHS camera.
Wow.
And I don't even know if you know what VHS is, but it's like, you know, it was the lowest format possible.
Outdated, right? Something like that, outdated.
Yeah. Outdated, very outdated. Even in 1995, it was outdated. And so I was kind of crushed. I didn't know what to do. I was a little despondent. I didn't have a lot of time. And this, I went to the equipment center, and this guy that I always thought was like a racist individual that didn't mm-hmm. like me and didn't like black people, he had heard about what happened. And he said to me, he said, "You know what, Glenn?" He said, "I really don't like what happened to you. That wasn't cool." He wrote down on a piece of paper, he said, "Here, call this guy and tell him I told you to call. Tell him what you need."
Right.
And I called the guy, and his name, I never will forget it, his name was Ian McIsaacs of California Communications Corporation, which is a huge company out here. And he made an appointment that day, and I went in, and I spoke with him, and I told him what had happened and where I was going. And, well, to make a long story short, he gave me a $100,000 camera to take
wow.
with
oh
me
my
to
God.
Go to Washington, D.C.
Oh, my God.
The only thing
that
I paid
so
for was the insurance. And I, my mind was really blown, you know. And so I think it, I was. This is something that I was meant to do. So before we left, when I told my friend Linus, he couldn't believe it. And I said, "Yeah, we got to go pick up the camera package." And the only thing I had to do was pay $75 for the insurance to insure the camera package for $1 million.
Oh my
and
gosh!
So I mean, and you don't know just how amazing that was back in those days to be. To be given that kind of a blessing, because that's what it was, really was. So,
I have a question for you, Glenn.
Yes.
Really quick. How did you feel at that moment when you found out that you were going to be able to attend this phenomenal event and you had the right camera and the proper tools that you needed to be able to go? How did you feel? I want to know how you felt on the inside.
Well, on the inside, I felt blessed, because mm-hmm. I knew that if I had taken a VHS camera there, number one, I wouldn't have been inspired, I think, to do the things that I wound up doing when I got to the march, because I wouldn't have been inspired, because when I got there, everyone had great cameras, and I can see myself
right.
up there with a VHS camera, and people saying, "What in the world?" It's an amazing thing, because when I was on the podium, and I'll get to that in a minute, when I was on the podium, there were at least, at minimum, 50 other men shooting that march. Where from the standpoint of where I was, I wound up 15 feet from the lectern, and I could see the people. I could almost reach out and touch the speakers. And
wow.
I could turn behind me, and I could see the vast crowd of, you know, you said it was 1 million men, but it was really more like the calculations are almost 2 million men were at the million.
So
men
it was
mark.
Double. It was double.
It was
oh,
double. But what people can't feel. Well, let me share a little bit more of the story with you, because it is an amazing story. So when we finally got to, we caught it. We had to take a flight because we couldn't take a bus, because it would take us too long and we were in school. So we flew out there, and it was miraculous that I even got the money to do that. But somehow the money was provided. I think I just took some of my school money or whatever, and we got there. And we wound up in Chantilly, Virginia, because on the phone I called, and they said, "Well, Chantilly, Virginia." I asked them, "Where's Washington, D.C.?" And they said, "Oh, it's just across the bridge." I'm like, "Oh, it's just across the bridge." And so we flew out there, and we went to Chantilly, Virginia, and it turns out that the bridge she was talking about was 30 miles away. So, so here we are in this hotel, 30 miles from Washington, D.C. in Chantilly, Virginia. And so we just gathered our stuff up and took a taxi to Washington, D.C. And when we got to Washington, all of the rooms were gone. We couldn't find a room anywhere. So here we are in Washington. Huh?
I'm sorry about that. I was saying that that had to have been an expensive ride to take a cab 50 miles.
to Washington, D.C.
30 miles in. Yes.
30 miles in. And but, you know, we were just happy to be there, and we finally got there, and we couldn't find a room. And my friend Michael had a friend, and he called him, and he said, well, if you can get to my house, you know, you can stay here. So we wound up doing some interviews and what have you, and the night of the march, we wound up at the place of the march at about 12 midnight. And when we got there, they hadn't even built the stand or put up the bulletproof when there was a bulletproof shield that they put up. And we wound up shooting all of that, which is, I think, footage that a lot of people didn't even get. More importantly, I wonder what happened to a lot of those men that were shooting, because to this date, right now, there's only been, I think, one other documentary that's come out on the Million Man March from footage that was shot there, and I just don't know what happened. But I remember us there, and we were watching, and it was a dark night. It was like very, very spiritual night. And we could hear men in the background behind us as they were working. We could hear them. They were singing, and they were encouraging each other, and they were talking, and they were telling stories. And you know, you couldn't see because it was so dark, but you could hear more and more men. And I remember as the sun came up, I was wondering, will there be a million men at the Million Man March? You know, we heard a rumor that troops were collecting on the border, and that, you know, if anything happened at the march, that the march was going to be attacked. And Michael and I, we made a pledge. We said, okay, no matter what happens, we have to document what transpires this day. So if one of us is killed or injured, the other one has to take the camera and finish shooting and protect the footage, no matter what. And
we
made that pledge to each other, and we meant it. And so we understood what our duties was. So, but, you know, finally the sun started coming up, and I could see behind me, and I saw just a sea of men. At that time, when we saw it, when the sun came up, I think it was maybe like about 500,000 men there already. We're talking about 5:30 in the morning. And as the day wore on, it became apparent that there was millions of men at the Million Man March. And it became so powerful. The feeling in the crowd was so powerful. It was so spiritual that I actually was touched to the point of crying, because I could see that this ocean of men was there because they wanted to atone, and they wanted to be better men, and they wanted to do something positive for their communities. And when you're a part of something like that and you see that, you know, it just affects you in a way that was different. I was affected when I came back. I found myself having to become a single parent, and my son at the time was 12 years old, and I actually had to finish raising him on my own, and I didn't hesitate. You know, it was an honor.
Right.
It was a privilege. And right now, he's in Washington, D.C., going to American University, getting his master's degree. And he
Beautiful.
Was just elected in the student body there. He's one of the but another thing happened to me when I came back. I became more studious, and I just wanted to perfect my craft, and so I worked very hard. And when I graduated in 1997, I became the first African-American valedictorian in the 60-year history of my school. And
oh my God.
it wasn't an easy thing to do, but it really wasn't hard either, because I just really wanted to be my best. Because what had happened when I was at the Million Man March, I looked out there and I saw all of these honorable men, black men, and I just got this sense of pride that I just,
right.
I never felt anything like that before, ever in my life. And it just made me want to say, when I took that pledge at the end, a lot of people don't know, at the end of the Million Man March, the minister, Minister Louis Farrakhan, administered a pledge to the men that was there. It's the first time, I think, in the history of the world that 2 million men held hands and took a pledge together to become better men, to become better fathers, to become better husbands, to go back to their communities and try to do better things there, to bring some positive things to the community. And it was just an amazing thing to do, to be a part of that. And I took that pledge to heart. And I think
right.
that's one of the reasons why when I came back, I was a changed person. And so I determined that I was going to finish this project, and I went through a lot of trials and tribulations. After it took 15 years, I came back with 14 hours of footage, and that was one of my problems. How do you cut 14 hours of footage into 99 minutes, into a 100-minute documentary?
Wow.
The other thing was I didn't even have the stuff after I graduated from school, the equipment to be able to do it. And so I had to acquire things, and I had to grow through life and get things to until I could get to the point to where I could actually be able to cut the project. And that finally happened about 5 years ago. I began in earnest cutting the project. And it took until I actually finished the project a year ago and called it Glenn and Linus Michael Attend the Million Man March, because my friend Linus Michael Letting was missing. And
right.
I thought, okay, if I name it this, if Linus Michael, you know, he's from Kenya, hears this title, he'll know that it's him. It's he and I. Maybe somehow in my mind I was thinking, he'll contact me, he'll get the video, and he'll get my information off it, and he'll contact me and let me know that he's okay. Well, it turns out
right.
A few months ago, Linus Michael called me, and he was in Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
I know.
So you're saying that you searched for Linus the entire time after the documentary film. You couldn't find him. And
I had the, yeah.
Out of all the years of searching, he was right there in your city, in L.A.
Well, actually, he had went back to Kenya, and they had some upheaval there, and his parents got him back to America. So the last the school had known when I contacted looking for him was he had went back to Kenya. So, but
okay.
In between that time, he came back, but he wasn't going to school, so he never notified the school that he was back. So
right,
afterwards,
right.
After I finished that first project, I loved the project, but I was disappointed because I had did the minimalist things in that first go around. For instance, the picture needed some upgrading, what they call up resolution. It needed up resolution to HD. It was a poor audio mix. I had did the audio mix. It needed a professional audio mix. There was no music for the production, and there was no music soundtrack in the production, and I decided that wasn't good enough what I had done before. I just, in my heart of hearts, I said, you know, this is a project that is going to stand for hundreds of years after I'm gone, and it's documenting something that was very precious. And so I said, I have to add these things to the project. And when I went back and did that and up-resed it to HD and got a professional audio mix and wrote the music, that song that you played at the beginning of the show, that's my song. And
wow.
That's actually me singing it and playing the music.
Track.
That's the title
that's
track.
That's the title track for the documentary.
Yes, the love in Your Mind is the title track for the documentary. And I wrote that song because I felt that it was the love in the mind of the men who attended the Million Man March that made everything so perfect that day.
Right, right. I have a quick question, and then I want to see if my co-host, Carla B., had any comments or questions about your story thus far. So how many years between the actual filming to actually getting the project edited down and to the point that you were satisfied with the project, how many years was that in between?
I started cutting the project about 5 years ago in earnest. And when I first cut mm-hmm. it looked like, can you imagine if you're making you a sculptor and that starts off like from mud? Well, that's what it looked like. It looked like mud. It didn't make
oh,
any sense whatsoever. And
right.
I just kept working with it because I went to school to become a commercial filmmaker, and I didn't really think about really doing any documentaries, and so I had to learn a lot about documentary filmmaking. And the first cut that I had was like about 2 hours and 40 minutes. And my wife looked at it and she said, oh, my God, you got to cut this down. She said, this is just – I said, but baby, she said, uh-uh, don't baby me. She
That's
said,
right.
I love you and you're making me mad.
Right,
so,
right.
So I just kept cutting it, and I got it down finally to like 2.5 hours. I mean, it was a process over these years, and then finally I got it down to like 2 hours and 15 minutes, and then I got it down to like, I remember I got it down to like 2 hours once, and then there was some stuff I just had to have, and I went back and put it back in. My wife said, why did you put that back in? So I took it out. So finally, I kind of got a good idea, but through the narrative, and it began to take form. I wrote a narrative to it, and I began doing research because one of my problems was the Million Man March happened 15 years ago, which would make it basically archival footage of something that happened a long, long time ago. So my problem was also, how do you bring that up to today? And how do you make
right.
that today, not just something that happened 15 years ago? And so I began doing research, and I used the U.S. statistical information, and I compared it from then to now and from today, and I went back and I talked about the problems that they were having then and the correlation between those problems that we're having now and the discoveries and things,
right.
and that updated it to today and made it current. And one of the things that I had lamented was, and I don't know why this is, I think that maybe the media has a lot to do with it, but my film, although I've sent it to several African-American film festivals, has not been accepted in any of those festivals. And I kept thinking, look, how is this possible with all of these wonderful icons of the civil rights movement in it? Maybe I'm just really a terrible filmmaker or something. And, you know, I was thinking just all kinds of things. And just as recent as of the 17th, I got notice from the African Diaspora Film Festival that the film had not been accepted there. And I was feeling pretty bad about it, just a little crushed. But I said, you know, I know what I'm doing is the right thing. And then something really wonderful happened. I had sent a copy of it to of my film, The Minister Farrakhan, in September. And yes. I never heard any word whether or not he had received it or anything. I didn't know. But it was very interesting. Like an hour after I got the news that the film wasn't accepted, I was telling my wife, I said, you know, even though I won this big award from the American Pixel Association for the project, I said, but even though I've done that, I really wanted to be recognized by my own culture, my own peers.
Right.
And I do feel a little kind of let down that that's not going to happen this year. About 10 minutes after I got that out of my mouth, my phone started blowing up, and I was talking to my mother, who was out of town. And I said, well, I'll just call whoever it is back. And it just kept buzzing, ringing. So I said, Mama, I don't know what's going on. I need to call you back. Let me see who's calling. And so finally I got off the phone, and as soon as I hung up, the phone rang, and it was my partner, Eric. He said, brother, did you hear it? I said, hear what? He said, Minister Farrakhan, in a national speech to the nation about about the observance of the Million Man March, just talked about you for 20 minutes, you and your film. And how much he loved it.
Farrakhan himself.
Minister Farrakhan himself
mentioned your project. Glenn, can you tell us the name of the film again, the documentary?
Yes. My documentary is entitled Long Live the Spirit of the Million Man March.
Wow.
And you can get further information on it if you visit my website at millions13.com. It's available there for download. You can purchase a DVD, or you can just simply rent it as a movie on demand. There's links there for all of that.
I have one more. I have a comment and a question. I wanted to say, Glenn, that you have to be totally encouraged because this project is a world project. You can't see it as this. I know it's a piece for African Americans, but also it's an inspirational piece for the world. When I heard your story the first time, I was so inspired. I spread the word. I told people. I left there I just couldn't believe that this particular project was so inspiring, and you talking about it just made me want to go tell the world about it. So I just want to encourage you that although, you know, the film festivals may not have picked it up, that you have people like Lumumba, who will be introduced later on in the segment, as well as myself, Carla B., people in the media, they are very, very happy to expose the story of the Million Man March. And I just wanted to encourage you on that. And I would like to give it over actually to my co-host, Carla, for any comments or questions that she may have for you.
I appreciate it. Definitely want to say it's definitely been an honor and a pleasure just to be able to get on air and then just be able to sit back and be encouraged, and then also you gain so much knowledge from things that happened so many years ago. I mean, I know it was just like 15 years ago, but I was a baby entrepreneur at that time. But I want to say, I want to ask you, number one, just even being there at the Million Man March and being able to document it, I know just by me doing my little due diligence on it and hearing it and reading about it back then, there were so many people that opposed it. Why, and that's the question that I have, one of the questions I have for you is, why were so many opposed with the Million Man March?
I think there were a lot of reasons. One, there were some of our sisters felt that there was no reason to separate the men from the women to make the statement that was needed to be made. But I think Minister Farrakhan, in his wisdom, he made the right choice to call it a million man march because, see, he wanted to signal the men that it's time for them to step up.
Right. Okay.
And it wasn't to exclude the women, but it was to prod the men. And
right.
that there's a difference. And so some of our sisters, you know, they eventually kind of came around, but some of our sisters were like, well, why is it a million man march? I mean, you know, this isn't fair. You know, we should, you know, the sisters have been, you know, fighting just as hard as the men and taking the brunt of the system here, just as tough as the men. But they're, you know, they missed the point. There were some religious groups. You have to understand that Mr. Farrakhan was considered a lightning rod at that time, and there were some groups that there were a lot of things said about him as a person, as a man. There, especially with our Jewish brothers, a lot of our Jewish brothers, I think, that felt that he had said some disparaging things about them, and some of our churches and other groups, you know, they didn't want to be associated with someone that they viewed could possibly be bigoted or, you know, maligning a whole nother culture. That was a part of it, too. And then you just had people that did not want to see something like this succeed. And the media played a big, big, big role in that, because at the time, and I need to share with you, because you are kind of young, I need to share with you what
Thank
was going
you.
On to give you. That was a compliment. I hear it in your voice. Your youth exudes right
okay.
through on the radio. So, but to set it up for people, what people don't realize is there was a crisis in the black community at that time. Gang murders had reached critical mass. In the period, and I did the research, in the period from 1976 to 1995, in a 19-year period, there were over 300,000 homicides in the African-American communities in the United States. There are wars that many people aren't lost in. And we're talking young black men from the ages of 14 to 35 years old, 300,000 documented.
Wow.
Now, some people will say, well, you know, that's just a little, like 16,000 a year. 16,000 a year homicides is a lot of homicides. Washington,
right.
D.C. itself, they had stopped calling it the capital of America, and they started calling it the murder capital of America.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it was just that bad. Life, you know, and it was all over. There was a crack cocaine epidemic. You know, people forget about this. And here's one of the things, Carla B. and Queen G., that the Million Man March did. It said to the men that was there, and it said to the people that weren't there who were watching it, hey, it's okay for us to love each other again. It's okay
right.
for us to put down our weapons and to care for each other again. And we need to think about what we've been doing to each other in our communities and stop it.
Yes.
And we need to take a pledge before God to become better and to take this spirit that we feel here right now at the Million Man March, this spirit of love that we've generated, and when we leave here, take it back into our communities.
Yes.
And that's
Glenn,
what happened.
That's why I wanted you to come on and tell your story. I don't feel as if that spirit that was there at that moment should die or leave out. We have to keep it going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have to definitely keep it going. And to me, the story and the inspiration and what happened that day, we need to revisit it as often as possible to get people charged in our community, to get people off of their butts so that we can build a family and homes and you know what I'm saying, bring empowerment into our communities. And to motivate, you know what I mean, not just our men, but just our families in general, because I believe it starts there. You know what I mean?
And, yeah, well, let me say this. Now, Brother Lumumba did something that we had talked, and he did something that was very interesting, because the other thing that I had brought up is, Joe, don't think because it was the Million Man March that the women weren't very instrumental in what happened that day.
Right.
It was, after all, a sister that called me and told me I was going. And, you know, the women played a significant role, not only in the background by urging their men to attend and to go, and by being bright, by making them heroes in their eyes when they walked out the door to leave, to come. You know, see, these are things that you don't see, you know.
Right.
These are encouragements, you know. These are things that women have the power to do over men.
Right,
because they make us feel like men. You know?
Glenn, what we're gonna do now is, we keep speaking of Lumumba, our other special guest. We're gonna pay some bills, take a commercial break, and we'll be right back, you guys.
Sounds great.
He's back, he's bad, he's on top. It's Zane Coleman, Lil Zane. He has the big screen, he has the stage, he has a new CD, he has a single. He will captivate you with his swagger. Get this new single, put it in my lap. Go to ReverbNation.com/Lil Zane's World and get this single right now. And also check out Dope D featuring Tipsy. For bookings, contact Carla Bonds, EOTM Public Relations, at 909-559-1763. Brought to you by EOTM, B1 Music, U.S. Entertainment. This is a Ron Anthony production.
You better believe it.
My wife Carla started, seen Ronnie do it. Sweet T and Saint Tooth, they came through, taking their debut in the recession, showing us how to make do. In the middle was heavy, but light on the edge. With Chauncey Gibson, the righteous get fed. Trey Love crying from his heart to the core. On the move with the mind of an entrepreneur. A better tomorrow, we play for fight. Maximize potential, reshape your life. Time ain't never wasted. They got blogs with guided meditation. Rise above it all, at least. Navigating through this Middle East. It's like trying to rollerblade up a hill of grief. The radio media is a Maverick Tudor. With Grandma dripping Don Adams Jr.
Y'all know what it is, man.
E-O.
In the building, building.
O-G-O. Every day is our goal.
E-O.
Welcome back, y'all, to the Queens of Internet Radio. We have our special guest, Glenn Tari, and co-host Carla B. And we would like to introduce, actually, our other special guest speaker who is on the panel with us this evening. His name is Lumumba. He is the reason that I met Glenn Tari. And also, he's a good friend of mine. He's a community leader, very positive brother, African-American. And I would like to introduce Lumumba. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yes, I hear you fine.
Are you there? Hello?
I'm here, but I can't hear Lumumba. Oh.
Hello? Okay, Lumumba, are you there?
Hello,
did
I'm
you
here.
Guys hear me? Did you hear me do the
I'm
intro?
No, I did not hear everything break up. So I was,
okay,
I was
oh
like,
my
oh
God.
My God, I'm on the phone with the queen. Oh. I wouldn't put on the good smell good.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry about that, you guys. There was a lot of interference at a certain point, but I wanted to say again, we would like to welcome our other special guest speaker that's on the panel, Lumumba. He's a community leader, African American, one of my good friends as well. And we'd like to know what comments or questions you have for Glenn, or you know what you'd like to say about this subject of the Million Man March.
Yeah, I got one question for Glenn. You sung the song, The Love in Your Heart?
Yes, I did. I sang it.
Oh,
I wrote it. I played all the music in it.
God,
you know, that's one thing.
Multitasking.
When you're an independent filmmaker, you got to learn to do a lot of things or have a lot of money.
So what, you were filming the camera with your feet? Because, I mean, you on the piano, you editing and cutting. I mean, that's the testament, man. I didn't even know that. I said, dang, that song sounds familiar. I said, that sounds like Glenn. No, that ain't Glenn. I mean, he must have got that from somebody else. And it just here, and it's like, why, this speaks volumes to your talent, brother. That blew my mind. I said, you learn something new every day. And we've been hanging out for like 2 years, and I didn't know you sung that song. And I looked at that film like 5 times. I said, this sounds familiar, but wow, man. I'm big ups, man, because I can't even carry a glass of water, let alone a tune. So, you went up on me.
Yeah, well, it's just a love of the art, you know.
Right. Some of the highlights, man, really, it was my pleasure to actually carry on the legacy of the Million Man March. I mean, it really was. It was, I remember we did it a year ago when I first met Glenn. He was saying that he wanted to make the 15th annual, you know, the real thing. And I took him up on that. And even though we didn't communicate because of some of the challenges that he was having in his life, I took it upon myself to say that I was going to do this, and not only for Glenn, but for myself and for the community. It was something that really needed to happen. And so when I got in contact with him, you know, he was telling me that he really didn't get that much done. And I just told him, you know, real short, man, brother, I got it. Because I was already doing the work, because sometimes as men, we have to pick up after each other, and we have to say that in example. A lot of folks say, oh, yeah, I got your back, dog, you know, way back. But it's when somebody can carry your thought on to another level. That's when you know. That's just another testament to Glenn's outstanding work and his passion and what he brings to the table as a person. And so I just fed off of that and was able to have a very successful weekend, you know. And it was all around the Million Man March. But what happened to the Million Man March really was not the march. It was actually the spirit of the Million Man March. And we had some people come flying from Washington, D.C., and trust me, I think I had like maybe a $250 budget, but I was able to get people to fly out from D.C. on their own ticket. People was donating the money left and right. We made this thing happen. And it wasn't the actual event. Some things that happened before the event that really made this thing go. One of the things was the story that Glenn told at one of the schools that we visited. We actually visited two schools, and he sat down with these children, and he told them like about a 5-minute story about what happened with the Million Man March. And to sum it all up, he told these children, we marched because we loved you. Before these students even born, he said, we marched because we loved you. Man, I almost cried. I was in the back of the classroom. I had to man up, but I was ready to break down in tears. And it just, every time he tells the story, you know, you can feel how much it touched him, because he would just, you know, it's just the passion that he had when he told the story. When we visited the Marcus Garvey School, and that's the school that is in L.A., after we got done giving the presentation, which was an outstanding presentation, I mean, I was amongst some real true giants that weekend. You know what I'm saying? It was a weekend that I'll never forget. And, you know, the children actually asked, can they have our autograph? you know. And I didn't really do that much. I was just a byproduct. They just came and said, I don't know who looks, okay, just find it. You know, but they asked for Glenn, you know, they asked the president general of the UNIA, which is the Universal Negro Improvement Association, started by Marcus Garvey, the vice president that was there, the first assistant president general that was there, and they were signing autographs. Glenn signed the autograph, I signed the autograph, and it was really great. And then the Saturday was the superfood, where we were actually looking at food that was actually healthy, that wasn't meat, you know, it was excellent. It was an excellent meal, like a 5-7 course meal, no meat involved, very healthy. I ate well. People said that they ate a meal and they didn't even have a headache. One of the brothers said, man, I had a headache when I came here. And when I ate the superfood, the headache went away. And I was just like, wow. And this was done by another dynamic brother named Keedy. And he's coming up with this very innovative way to really do some cutting edge health in the community. And so that was a great thing. And then one of the capstones to me was the Mothers, Wives, and Daughters of the Million Man March. And you know, this one lady, her name is Denise Williams, and she has her own nonprofit organization. This lady, to just tell a quick story, she's an ex-gang member, changed her life because of the Million Man March and how it touched her. She said the day of the Million Man March, she took the children to a park, and they all played. And she got with some of the other ladies that were there, and they said, what we're going to do is it would start like a Friday night, spend the night over my house, and she would teach them Black history, because they talked in a circle that day during the Million Man March, and they came up and said, our children don't know nothing about our Black history. So these ladies took it up upon themselves to have these children come over. It started out being like 5 or 6, and she said, you know, she was spending her own money. Then it went to like 8 or 9, and people would start to donate her food. And she said one day, you know, she was driving, and she looked where the hill where she would pick the kids up on Friday, and she said the whole hill was covered with 30-something kids, all ready to go
to the
program. And so she had to call people and tell them, you know, you guys have to, you know, make some car runs. And she said that, you know, that happened for a good couple of months, where they were actually coming, spending the night, learning about their history. So when people want to look at the numbers, you know, everybody want to play this numbers game, but nobody really want to look at, you know, the stories, the individual stories, how it touched people individually, and what really sparked this Million Man March to these different million movements. You had the Million Woman movement, you had the Million Family movement, you had the Millions More movement, you had Savior Day. You had so many things that came out of the Million Man March, and a lot of people kind of hang their hat saying that it was a Muslim thing, but it wasn't. The majority of the brothers out there weren't Nation of Islam. They were brothers that actually wanted to come out there and make a difference in the community. So
we have to really look at that. Lamumba, do you
yes.
feel as if that was some of the controversy, is that people felt that it was Muslim-based and not, you know, people trying to come together to empower the community? They were on a religious tip, and it caused controversy. Is that one of the problems?
I think in the beginning, yeah, you know, because you had a lot of Christian organizations that did not want to participate because of the controversy. I think later on, as history was being written to the 15 years, I think a lot of people did blame a lot of stuff on the Nation of Islam about, you know, them being organized and different things like that. And one of the questions was asked on one of the shows that we were happy to be on, where they were asking about, you know, will the Nation of Islam have all this infrastructure? You know, they could have took it to another level. And I said, you know, that really, it's our responsibility as a people to come together and do stuff. And if certain people don't want to give out their, you know, give their resources, then it is our job to create them. You know, and we have to start putting the onus on ourselves. So, you know, that's the controversy, but we have to really start dispelling that. And that was one of the reasons why I took the Million Man March on, was because we have to dispel a lot of the controversy, because a lot of brothers, even my age, you know, and I'm young, 35 years old, and it's like we still have this conversation, oh, that's a Nation of Islam thing. And it's like, no, it ain't. It's not, brother. It's not a Nation of Islam thing. It's a us thing, and it's not even, it's more than just a black thing. You know what I'm saying? People get that mixed up. It's a spiritual thing. It's a humanitarian thing. You know, and people need to start understanding that, because they always want to put us in this box, and they forget that we're human at the end of the day. And that's all we want, is to love one another, and that's what the spirit of the Million Man March was about. It was about us loving one another. It was more than just, you know, the Stop the Killing was just one aspect of the Million Man March. There was a lot of camaraderie, a lot of people just organizing. It was 400 groups that were started nationally, and most of them was led by women.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff that people don't understand how important the queens are.
I have another question for you. What are some of the personal things that you're doing in the communities to keep the spirit of the Million Man March alive?
Mostly working with the youth, mostly trying to instill in them some sense of purpose, and working with a lot of the gang intervention folks and a lot of the educators to really get them to understand to don't let our history be our mystery, you know, to really reach out and help each other and, you know, be more innovative and creative. And that's basically what I'm doing. Also working with the churches, different programs like that. I'm learning how to work with technology, because technology is really what everybody has their ear on these days. And so really learning how to get out there and work with technology. But basically, just setting an example.
Do you find it to be challenging, some of the things that you're doing in the community? Is it challenging? Because now there have been a lot of programs cut out in the community. There is a high gang, there are high gang numbers. People are being murdered and killed. And, you know what I mean? There's a breakdown in the family, all of that. Do you find it challenging to go out there and work with the youth and try to build them up?
Yeah, it has some challenges, but it's more interesting than challenging. It's interesting because you see it's like something right in your face, and you keep getting slapped by the same hand, but you swear to God it's the wind. And that's what's happening to our community. It's like we're getting slapped with this big old hand, pow, and it's like, oh, it's a strong breeze out here today, you know. And we have so many distractions with the media, the television, and all these other things. So, you know, it's really, to me, it's interesting, because I look at what's going on and I just trudge forward. And you have to start, you know, making lemon into lemonade and really taking that kind of aspect when you go out here in the community. Because being a black man in the community and, you know, you've been a witness to some of the things I went through as just being a black man, single father in the community, how the outside community looks at you. And so you have to keep your head up, and you have to turn these challenges into opportunities, and you have to look at, you know, how do you continue to be the example? How do you keep waking up every morning saying, what can I do? Taking that time by yourself to give thanks for that moment.
What message do you have for the community? What type of support do you need, you know, here in the community as you're going out with the youth, talking to them, trying to empower them? What do we need to say to the community to get them on board with your mission and what you're trying to achieve out here with the youth?
First and foremost, man, love yourself. You know what I'm saying? Understand that if you don't love yourself, man, ain't nobody else gonna love for you. And once you understand that, then understand that it's a village. You know, we have to get back to a village concept. We got to understand that when we form these blocks, they got to be positive blocks. And we got to turn gangs into groups, organized groups that are structured to build instead of put together to destroy. And, you know, just really looking at that aspect of it. And then going on from there and really engaging in some civic engagement as far as economics and being, you know, being a little bit more creative you know, I think a lot of us have this paradigm of money and power, but we need to understand that it's a socialization, a networking that really builds camaraderie that will get us to the other side as opposed to I need to get this dollar. You know, we need to start looking at how do we set the example so that our children learn how to work together, where we can collective bargain. And I think that that's very important. And it does it involve economics? Yes. But it all involves having time, spending time, energy, and effort, and setting the example for our youth and setting the example for yourself. But it all goes back to self-love. You know, we have to have self-love. And if I would tell anybody anything to really help me out is to love themselves and to really go out and, you know, really show that love to some child and be the example, because that's what we're up against, you know what I'm saying, is the destruction of our children. At the end of the day, we have to look at what's really going on, and I know I'm going to throw something real controversial out there, but, you know, a lot of women are killing our children before they even make it into the world. And that's something that needs to be addressed in the 21st century, is what's going on with us not having enough self-love to, number one, protect ourselves, and then not having enough self-love to be responsible when something happens. And I'm not saying that it's all the women's fault. You know, I'm guilty of it, too. I participated in abortions as well. And that's a hot-button topic nationally. But it's something that as people, as humanity, that we really have to address, especially as Africans in America, because we're the one that's really up under the gun more than anybody else because the spotlight is on us. Now, we look at the African women make up 14% of the population, but they're responsible for over 40% of the abortion rates. And this is not me just coming up with some random number. I would suggest everybody to watch this film called My Alpha 21, which really gives you the breakdown on eugenics. That is one of the things that we really need to look at, is how can we get to these youth and really tell them, you know, if you're going to engage in sexual activities, protect yourself and don't use abortion as birth control. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And really, you know, those are some hot button issues that folks are not really ready to engage on a whole level. But there are certain churches, there are certain community groups that are engaging it, and it needs to be engaged not from a political issue, but it needs to be engaged from a humanitarian issue, so that, you know, women can really understand when they go into the abortion clinic what really goes on. What really is the undertone of you going to the abortion clinic is bigger than just, you know, you just getting an abortion. It's something that's deeper than that. It's an agenda. It's an agenda,
yes.
And it's subliminal, and it's not your fault at the end of the day, but it is a cause and effect that has happened, and it's the responsibility of the village to be able to take care of that, to prevent it, and if it does happen, it's the village's responsibility to allow the space for the woman to make a decision to do the right thing and stop, and, you know, not, you know, take away from our children before they even get out into the world. You know, there's a 5% chance that a black woman will have an abortion than there is for a white woman once they become impregnated. These are some real hardcore statistics, and I think that when you fast forward the Million Man March to 15 years into the 21st century, this is some of the questions that and some of the tasks that we have to do. We have to tell the men they need to step up and protect themselves if they want to engage in that type of activity. We have to step up because there's other things that are out there that is bigger than abortion, STDs, and all these different things that we have to deal with. And that's just the very basics of respecting yourself and respecting
right.
others just from that aspect. And so it's, you know, it's very basic when you look at it, but once again, it's that big hand slapping you in the face, but you swear to God it's a strong wind. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But a strong wind don't give you no black eye. A strong wind don't leave a bruise. A strong wind, you know what I'm saying, help move the leaves and help move seeds so they can start life. They don't leave marks and bruises and scars for your life. So, you know, that's basically
the message
that I was thinking.
I love that analogy that you just used, Lumumba. And Carla can vouch for this. We did a previous show about abortion, and yes, it was very controversial. People have different views on that subject matter. And I feel the same as you. I agree with you, Lumumba, that, you know, women do have the right and they have the choice, but they shouldn't use, you know what I'm saying, abortion as a birth control. It's gotten really bad. It's gotten really, really bad. I mean, when I say that that show was so awesome, and we had a it was a roundabout on that particular show. Everybody was going back and forth. They were opinionated. You know what I mean? It's a big issue in our communities. I want to also see if Carla B had any other comments. Any other comments?
I'm just listening. I'm definitely in agreement with you. This last caller, I'm not caller, but the guest. I don't want to pronounce his name wrong.
Lumumba.
Don't worry, everybody. Lumumba.
Okay.
Yeah.
You definitely, you know, a young sounding guest, but full of wisdom. So you may sound like you're young, but look, it sounds also like you've lived like 101 years or something, like a Mandela. So. I definitely hope the listeners are listening and taking heed, so to speak, to a lot of things that you're sharing, because it's definitely some thought-provoking stuff, and I, you know, most definitely appreciate you sharing with our listeners.
It's always good to have a conversation with folks that are willing to listen, and once again, thanking for the queens to have me on, because I'm on the phone with some queens.
Yeah, and really quickly, we're definitely going to have you on some other shows, because a lot of things that you spoke about, we've had shows on those different topics. One thing that we try to do is definitely bring certain perspectives that maybe mainstream media doesn't want to really talk about. We talk about that here. We really want to get people to think, you know what I'm saying, and changing their ways, so to speak, when it comes to a lot of things. So definitely keep that in mind.
Oh, shoot, I love it. Shoot. I mean, I got to go get my little scepter and my little throne. I mean, we really have to wake up and be honest with ourselves. You know what I'm saying? I think that is what's going on in the 21st century, especially with us young folks.
Right.
We have problems being, you know, having reality. We live in a soundbite world where it's just a couple of words and, oh, I'm in it like Flynn, when there's more to it than that. You know what I'm saying? And it covers up what's really going on, and we all seem to wear these masks. And when you look at the baby boomer generation, you know, some of them are starting to take responsibility for not passing the torch, and the NAACP syndrome, where they get a position of power and they keep it till they like 90. And they don't train the next generation, so we run around here lost in the sauce. And so what you're seeing is a second generation, because it's not just Lumumba that's having these conversations. I'm bouncing this off with several other brothers and sisters in my community that are having these conversations. And it is time for us to learn from the past, and the word that we call Sankofa, which is going back to the past and bringing everything forward that is good, and having that conversation and passing the information on to our youth, and not only just passing the information on, but allowing for them to interact and make the mistakes so we can be there to push them forward and say it's okay. Because a lot of times we made mistakes, and, you know, we just kind of had egg on our face because we never really had our jegnas, which is another word for mentor, because mentor is a European word, and that's a whole other issue, to you actually say it's okay. You know what I'm saying? And so now you're in a generation that is seeking out wisdom. As before, you had a generation prior to us that really wasn't seeking out wisdom because they were ghetto entrepreneurs. You know what I'm saying? And that was done by design. All this stuff was done by design. Everything, Carla B, that you can almost put your finger on what happened. You see what I'm saying? COINTELPRO, we can go, list goes on paper,
right.
Operation Paperclip, MK Ultra. All this other stuff, we can go on and on. But the thing is this, is not to harp on the past like a lot of my comrades get on. It's what are we going to do with the future?
Right.
We can't keep on running around here screaming from the top of buildings that the sky is falling. It's already
right.
Failed. It's time for us to pick up the pieces. You know, our generation's responsibility is to pick up the pieces. Our generation's responsibility is to find the pieces and find the pieces that are good and take them forward. And the pieces that are negative, leave them alone.
Right, right.
You know,
really.
Excellent example.
Yeah, really quickly, just want to put out there that we got about 14 minutes left. Shante, tell me this, because we got a couple callers that are calling in. You want to take a caller really quick?
Yes, ma'am. That would be great.
Okay. All right, cool. I'm going to go ahead and unmute a caller by the name of Sarge. He's been waiting so ever patiently. You are now live on EOTM Radio.
How you doing?
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, Hello, Sarge. Girl.
How you doing, Sarge?
I'm good. I'm listening. I was listening to the guy talk. That's when I called in the show because I just happened to click on, the show, that was on because it's pretty late where I'm at. I don't know where you guys are at. I got an ongoing debate going on my website right now about black men going out here and building and networking and, being competitive with other races of men. And I don't know if that's along the lines of what you guys are talking about with, Million Man March and Unity type of thing. And, I pose certain questions to women, about that, because sometimes I see the complaints that a lot of black women make being invalid based off of there being some type of resistance to part A, but then when you get to part, Z, they want that to happen. I guess an example being, a woman may have an issue with a man being in charge or a man being head of the household or a man making more money or things like that, but then statements are made like, well, we don't respect you black men because you don't go out here and build this and build that and you're not corporate and you don't control any niche or segment of the, financial markets or anything, which is true. I mean, it's a valid complaint, but when I don't see women seeking those type of men that would have the potential to go off in that direction, then I got to question, the complaint. Like I have a colleague who his sister or his nephew is the result of a Ray Ray and Pookie situation. His sister, God knows why, nobody knows why, she went out and got with a guy who didn't have himself together. And now the uncle, is raising his nephew to be a responsible young black man to go out here and do the right thing and do the proper thing. And he said something to me, and it kind of floored me when he said it. He said that, as much as he's teaching his son to be this, type of black man that you would think, would be respected, he's saying, be it that there's so many black children, especially black girls, who are born without their fathers, that there's some woman teaching her daughter, to be strong and independent and completely autonomous from him. So even when this young boy, when he grows up and he becomes that man that he's supposed to do and go out here and build this and build that, he's got, a handful of sisters that he's going to come across who've been taught to, you want a man like that, but you don't really want a man like that. It's kind of like a resistance to it. Which leaves me with the question of what's the role of black men, today? Are we supposed to be the breadwinners? Are we not supposed to be the breadwinners? Is it supposed to be egalitarian? Is it supposed to be equal, 50-50? We share the responsibilities? Because I got to tell y'all, ladies, one of the things that does frustrate me about black women in reference to men playing, fulfilling their roles is, when you look at, women saying they want things to be egalitarian or a woman saying I'm making more money than a man or whatever and I'm the head, so she's the head. The only issue I have with women in regards to that is a lot of women want the power to make the decisions, but they don't want the accountability or responsibility or the blame that would come along with if a mistake was made. Men are very, if we screw up, we screw up. You can't really blame a woman if she got with your program. You get what I'm saying? But if a man gets with a woman's program, like if a woman is driving a car and she crashes the car, she don't want you to drive the car. You said, okay, fine, you can drive the car. You fall asleep in the passenger seat. She crashes the car, and then, when you say, hey, you crashed the car, what's wrong with you? She'll turn around and say, well, you're the man. You're supposed to be. I shouldn't be driving in the first place. And see, that to me is one of the reasons why I don't particularly like any type of role reversal in the black community, because I feel like that's one of the things that's destroying the community, because there's a disincentive for men to actually go out here and be men. Going back to, you know, my friend with his nephew, you know, what's the incentive for this young black boy to go out here? I mean, you could say, hey, just do it for yourself. Yeah, that's nice and fine to say it and look at it that way, but I'm saying when you don't get the full-on support of women expecting you to be in that position, not just for their own benefit, but for the benefit of the community, you know, it's kind of like, well, what's the incentive for these guys to go out here and be, you know, real men? Because, you know, I get a sense from a lot of women that they want men to be men when it's convenient. But in any other sense, you know, all the other stuff that comes with being a man that would be negative, like you're getting with his program, you're moving into his house, he's, you know, 90% of the time the decisions are going to go in his favor. But yet, at the same time, he's still handling all the business. You get what I'm saying? Like, so
right.
It's like I kind of ask women, I'm like, what do you want?
Can I say something about this?
I have
a little experience I think that I can speak to on this issue with you.
We have five minutes
right?
left, you guys.
Okay. You know, Sarge, I think a lot of times we get hung up on being a man and being a woman, and that's not really what it's all about in a relationship. It's about being a team. And what a team does is what is necessary to be done. And when you have it like that, then the issues of being a man and being a woman, they become secondary and most often non-existent. Because, you know, if everybody is covering the whole and we do what we must. I've been married now for 10 years, and I can speak to this. What makes my relationship work. And one thing is, I never say to my wife, I'm the man. I don't have to say that to her, you know, because, you know, I do whatever it is that is needed to do.
Let me just say this. I understand what you're saying. You shouldn't have to say that. You shouldn't have to proclaim your title. I guess my issue is, you know, just in short, is I don't want to say the expectation of the man being that role, but I mean, if we're going to be a team, we're going to be a team, you know. But I'm just saying, when it comes to that, you know, when you're a team, you share the responsibility, and I feel as though when things go awry, you know, I look at the complaints that black women file, and which is men are not being men. So I'm like, oh, you know, you go back, you look at the textbooks of what being a man is or whatever, let's just say, and there's an imaginary textbook, and you're like, okay, this is being a man, and then there's resistance and objection to that. It's like there's this fine balance that is understandable that they want, but I'm just saying when you look at the complaints that black women file about what black men are not doing, I'm saying to myself, why are you resisting men being men then?
Well, sorry, let me speak to that, man. It's a case-by-case basis, brother.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying? And we can't generalize. I mean, it's too much knowledge out there for us to be sitting up here trying to come up with a book. There's no handbook on being a man, no handbook on being a woman. It's so many different things, because then you stumble into homosexuality. What you going to do about that? You study in it. You look at polygamy. What you going to do about that? You see what I'm saying? There's so many different things that you can go into. So,
There still is a basic foundation.
The basic foundation is man, woman, child. And the basic foundation of that is man, woman, know thyself. So you know what you're getting into. You know what I'm saying? Know who you are before you get into a relationship with somebody that'll end up making you somebody that you ain't. If she making you somebody that you ain't, you can't change people, you just change partners, brother. And that's what it goes down to. And you need to evaluate your partner before you get involved with her or them, whatever decision you decide.
I agree.
You see what I'm saying? So we have to be careful when we generalize women. We have to be careful when we generalize men. Hell, we have to be careful when we generalize society. It has to be a case-by-case basis. Malcolm X said, I don't judge a man by his skin color. I judge a man by the content of his character. This is Malcolm X. And this is Malcolm X after he left the Nation of Islam, when he understood that it's about humanity. It's not about, you know, a color. It's not about a gender. It's about humanity.
I agree with you, but what needs to be acknowledged is that there are cultural movements within the black community that, like concepts of being hood or concepts of being street or concepts of being the strong, independent black woman, you know, these type of things people are following. So you do have people who do fall within a category because they're following a certain philosophy or ideology. I understand what you're saying about case-by-case basis. I'm saying, but when you have people who are following a cultural movement, that's where you get into, you know, where I can come into the conversation and be general. But I'm not saying that you're incorrect, because you are correct. I'm just saying that when you look at, you know, the stuff that, you know, we see, you know, coming from even just the black community and the media and whatnot, and ABC specials, NBC specials, whatever it may be, there's a cultural theme. We even see it in black movies or Tyler Perry's movies, you know, the what is that movie, For Colored Girls. You know, there's only one decent brother in the whole movie.
Yes.
You know.
Fellas, I would love this conversation. We're going to have to do a part two because it's getting real heated. But we're getting actually close to the end of our segment, and I wanted to make sure that we gave our special guest, Glenn, a publicity moment as far as publicizing his project, letting our listeners know where we can find his documentary. So, Glenn, can you speak to our listeners and let us know where we can find you?
Yes, I will. Again, the name of the project is Long Live the Spirit of the Million Man March. And you can go to my website, which is millions13.com, MILLIONS, and the numbers 1 and 3.com. And there you'll find a page, a purchase page. It's a page where you can purchase a commemorative DVD, or you may also purchase a download, or you can rent it as a video on demand or movie on demand. There are links there on those pages, and you just go and click those. And I just want to say in closing, too, to your audience, that the Million Man March is a wonderful thing, and it's not, as Lumumba was saying, it's not just a cultural thing. If you go on YouTube, I have a channel there, and you'll see there's a comment where I did a premiere, and a lot of different cultural people came. And a particularly interesting reaction was this one Filipino lady who had just been in America about 5 years, and she came to the film, and she got on camera to talk about what she felt about the film. And midway through talking, she started crying. And she actually says, I don't know why I'm crying, And I talked to her later, and she just said, you know, it was such a human story. And she didn't feel it was a story about black men or, you know, she felt it was a human story that touched her. And she actually said, she said, what a wonderful group of men, what a wonderful race of people. But you could tell that what had touched her wasn't the fact that the men were black, but that they were men committed to something higher than themselves. And that's what we as American people and as individuals in all cultures can relate to. Commit yourself to something higher than yourself. You know, we've gotten pulled in by this material pile. So I just wanted to say that in closing. Long live the spirit of the Million Man March. Thank you, Carla B. and Queen G. And Lumumba, you know, for being a part of it. And I hope people will go see the documentary and tell others and get that spirit and use that spirit in your lives to do something positive.
Yes. Carla B., did you have any closing statements?
Definitely a great segment. I can't wait to part two. Hopefully there's a part two. And just great, great stuff from both of the guests and even the caller that called in.
Thank you. And I would like to especially thank Lumumba for putting together the Million Man March that I attended that allowed me to meet this awesome man, filmmaker. And, Glenn, I will say on the air to all of our listeners, I am going to do whatever I can as a leader myself in my own right and as a media person to make sure that your story is told. I don't think that it should have stayed at that time 15 years ago, that we could actually keep the spirit of the Million Man March alive, and I will do the best that I can to make sure that that happens. So
thank
I wanted to
so
say
much,
that to
man.
You. And I appreciate you coming on our show, the Queens of Internet Radio. It was a great segment. Thank you, caller. Thank you, Lumumba, my friend. Keep doing what you're doing out here in the community as well, Lumumba. We appreciate your sacrifice, and I'll say that to you myself. With knowing you personally and seeing the things that you've done out here, you're a great human being. And that's what this segment was about, humanitarianism, not anything else. So that's my comment.
That's what's up. Great show tonight, you guys. Peace and blessings, everybody. Good
peace
night.
And blessings.
Good night.
Thank you very much.
EOTM Radio. Entrepreneurs on the move. Reshape the life for a better tomorrow.